William Whitney Borden from The Christian Standards in Life, Stewardship and Daily Living. Daily reading. Fidelity is what is required in stewards. Do these words really apply to the occasional student of large means, or do they inquire into a quality which governs the use of money and a score of things besides? Number one, what constitutes the test of a man's stewardship? Now, after a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and maketh a reckoning with them. And he that received the 5 talents came and brought another 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Lo, I have gained other 5 talents. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things, and I will set thee over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. And he also that received the 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Lo, I have gained other 2 talents. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things, and I will set thee over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Matthew 25, verse 19 through 23. It was not money that made Borden noteworthy. That was only one of his 5 talents. If he had been a man with 1 million, his life would have been just as inspiring, for the secret of his usefulness lay in this, that he was a faithful and wise steward. Luke 12:42. Have we been as faithful in a little as if it were much? Number two. To whom is the stewardship of money entrusted? Many students are quite familiar with the story of Jesus and the young ruler have said, What has that to do with me? I have not great possessions. And Jesus looked upon him, loved him, and said unto him, One thing thou lackest, go sell whatsoever thou hast, and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me. But his countenance fell at the saying, and he went away sorrowful, for he was one that had great possessions. And Jesus looked round about, and saith unto his disciples, How hardly shall they that have riches enter into the kingdom of heaven? And the disciples were amazed at his words. But Jesus answered again and said unto them, Children, how hard it is for them that trust in riches to enter into the kingdom of God. Mark 10, verse 21 through 24. Wealth is a high hurdle in the race of life. Are the dangers and the obligations of money any greater for the rich student than for the student who is working his way through college? How shall we state the principle which we believe should govern all our expenditures, small and great? Number three, every man is the free custodian of his time as much as of his money. For the most part, we live in a carefree sense of the present, fighting shy of the claims of Jesus upon our time. We must work the works of him that sent me. While it is day, the night cometh, when no man can work. John 9:4. The man who is under a sense of trusteeship applies it to the use of his time. His days are God's and must all make their contribution to his plan. Indolence is barren. The unimportant becomes subservient to the important. Borden said to a friend after the death of a missionary doctor in Cairo, Now we must work all the harder, for the night cometh. Are we putting first things first? Are we sauntering along through each day, or are we governed by a sense of the urgency of life? What do our weekly schedules reveal as to our character and our conception of values? Number four, the ideals a man possesses are equally a trust. When the aged Paul wrote his farewell letter to his young friend Timothy, his words rang out with a note of exultation. For I am already being offered, and the time of my departure is come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to me at that day, and not to me only, but also to all them that have loved his appearing. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 6 and 8. And like an echo, we catch the appeal. O Timothy, guard that which is committed unto thee. 1 Timothy 6:20. What an abhorrent friend said of him. We all admired the way he stood up for what he believed, in the face of no end of ridicule from the rest of the class. Bill was willing to be a fool for Christ's sake. He kept the faith. Do we guard our ideas as loyally? What is our loyalty costing us? Number 5. Stewardship involves daily devotion of oneself to his ideals and his task. And he said unto all, if any man would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Luke 9:23. Surrender to Christ may lack either because it is subject to a reservation or because it is allowed to lapse. Borden gave all without any condition. I surrendered all to Jesus. And he kept the fires burning daily. He was sensitive to the danger of losing ground. I know, he wrote, that it is no easy thing to serve the Lord, but many others have been enabled to, and there is no reason why I should not. When speaking on the price of power, he used to emphasize the necessity of a daily renewal of one's consecration. Would a closer observer regard our Christianity as sustained or spasmodic? Number 6. The measure of a man's life is not in years alone. And God is able to make all grace abound unto you, that ye, having always all sufficiency in everything, may abound unto every good work, as it is written, he that scattereth abroad, he hath given to the poor. His righteousness abideth forever. And he that supplieth seed to the sower and bread for food, shall supply multiply your seed for sowing, and increase the fruits of your righteousness. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 8 to 10. The passion of Borden's life was that God might have his will done in me. It was by strength of service, not by length of days, that he believed his life must be measured. Are we all quite content to live each day carefully, under sealed orders, whether tomorrow holds life here or hereafter? Number 7. The joy of stewardship depends on the greatness of the cause. But ye shall receive power when the Holy Spirit is come unto you, and ye shall be my witnesses both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria, and unto the uttermost part of the earth. Acts 1:8. Men who achieve most in the world are absorbed in a great cause. Borden's cause was foreign missions. He believed they expressed God's supreme wish for mankind, and he therefore made it the supreme wish and intention of his life. His missionary purpose underlie his discipleship and unify his life. He carried daily on his heart his watchword, the evangelization of the world in this generation. He literally lived the watchword. It gave point and direction and enthusiasm to his consecration. He built all his interests into this program. Is our cause as truly worthwhile as this? Study for the week. Number 1. Few men go to college more richly endowed than William Borden was when he entered Yale. He had inherited sterling qualities from his father, and the comradeship and religious training of his mother had helped to establish him in solid character and a clear, straightforward faith. The home life he knew had been radiant and wholesome. A boisterously happy lad, he had been surrounded with the advantages which wealth can provide. He had prepared for Yale at the Hill School in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, had done credible work there, and had taken active part in the religious and athletic life of the school. Before he entered college, his parents had him make a tour of the world in the company of a friend. Never did a boy travel with eyes more widely open. So it was that as a mere schoolboy, he had gained a world consciousness and had begun to look upon life in its larger relationships. While in London on the return journey, an experience came to him that marked an epoch in his life. It was at a meeting which William had missed his dinner to attend. A simple entry in his diary records the fact that he was much helped and surrendered all. The act of complete dedication to Christ was never revoked. Borden went to Yale in 1905 with high ideals. He knew that college life would bring great testings both of faith and standards. He had written shortly before, "College is so near, and there will be such a lot of things to do. Tremendous opportunities." It was his fixed purpose to follow Christ and hold to his ideals rather than to accept conditions as he found them and followed the crowd. He entered at once into many of the activities of undergraduate life. He took part in various forms of athletics, but was most proficient in swimming, sailing, rowing, wrestling, tennis, and golf. He rowed number 4 in his class crew. On the wrestling mat, he was said to have the strength of a bull, and while at Yale, he specialized in this branch of sport. His scholarship was of a high character, as was seen in the fact that he was elected president of Phi Beta Kappa. Around Dwight Hall, the headquarters of the Young Men's Christian Association, he was one of the most active men, a tireless worker on the missionary committee, a most painstaking and efficient mission study class leader, an enthusiastic member of the student volunteer band. He did a far-reaching missionary work. As a Bible group leader, he was successful because he put pains into his preparation and followed up each man in his group. One of his friends mentioned his not having a Bible group except among the hardest nuts in the class. In fact, the most useful feature of his religious efforts was his work with individuals. Once he wrote, "I tried 3 times to see that hill fellow who is in with the bad bunch, but couldn't find him. I hope to be able to make another effort before I leave." But he did not forget the needs beyond the campus. With a friend, he founded the Yale Hope Mission as a sort of Jerry McAuley, that's McAuley, mission for New Haven. Not only a large share of his financial responsibility for this work, but after the first year, the burden of its direction was chiefly on his shoulders. To the habitudes of the place, it was a familiar sight to see Bill Borden on his knees with his arm around the shoulders of a down-and-out, praying with him and showing him the way to a restored manhood. When Borden was graduated in 1909, he declined to remain at Yale as secretary of the Christian Association, but plunged into his theological work at Princeton Theological Seminary. Here he did the same solid work as at Yale. And here, too, he found time for outside interests, such as the Yale Hope Mission in New Haven, the National Bible Institute in New York, the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, and a colored church in Princeton. On the completion of his theological course in 1912, he was for some months a traveling secretary of the student volunteer movement, visiting colleges in the East and South and winning men's interest in service for the peoples of non-Christian lands. After being ordained to the ministry, he went to Cairo, Egypt, where he was to spend a year in the study of Arabic and Islam under his friend, Dr. S. M. Zewemer. Z-W-E-M-E-R, and others. He was then to go on to the further east to take up his work among the Muslims of China. But after 3 months in Cairo, devoted to study, in which he was making striking progress, and to active Christian service in varied forms, he was stricken with meningitis and died on April 9, 1913. It turned out that after all his preparation had been not for China, but for wider areas. And as those who knew Borden looked up and down their memories of his life, they say, "There was a rock-ribbed soul, as severe with himself as he was tender with others, denying himself daily and seeking always to fulfill the wish of one, whom he called Master and Lord. His life consisted not in his great wealth, nor in the abundancy of other things that he possessed, but in the using of all as a trust. It is required in stewards that a man be found faithful, and Bill Borden was a faithful and wise steward." Number 2, it was his sense of stewardship that made Borden a missionary. As a youngster of 8, he had written his life ambition on a slip of paper, which was not read till 10 years later. "I want to be an honest man when I grow up, and true and loving and faithful man. Short as his life was, he lived that purpose through with the ascent on the faithful. His prayer was that God might work in him his perfect will, and having taken this attitude, he was in a safe position to determine his life work, for no man is ready to fix upon his career until he gives himself entirely to the direction of the will of God and reckon his life a trust. Before entering Yale, he had at first hand studied conditions in mission lands and had read widely on the various fields. The facts were compelling, and as Borden prayed, they became the call of God to the foreign mission field. There was no vision in the night, no ecstatic mood, but a calm, deliberate decision. He came to Yale with his life purpose defined. He was to be a foreign missionary. He was deeply interested in China and hoped to do his life work there. Then at the Nashville Convention of the Student Volunteer Movement in 1906, the Muslim problem began to appeal strongly to him, and from that time on he was eager to work among Muslims. Next, like the first missionary to the Gentiles, he became ambitious not to build on another's foundation, and when, after long and earnest prayer, he felt himself irresistibly drawn to pioneer work among the Mohammedans of China, he found the opportunity to satisfy all three ambitions. The watchword of the student volunteer movement, the evangelization of the world in this generation, appealed strongly to Borden. He gave deep study to it, became one of its most intellectual and enthusiastic exponents, and allowed it to become a ruling passion within him. He chose a missionary thesis for his master's degree, which he planned to take at Yale. Both at Yale and Princeton, and as a traveling secretary of the student volunteer movement, he was an untiring recruiting officer for missionary service. Number three, I am God's steward of my life. My life is lived a day at a time. Therefore, I am God's steward of each day. Borden's conscience bowed to the summon of the syllogism, syllogism. He held his days and hours in trust for God. The students and professors of both Yale and Princeton were impressed by the intensity and thoroughness of his work. It was not that he cared for honors, but there was an exacting life work ahead, and he must prepare himself for it. Persistently, he investigated the conditions throughout his entire parish, which was the world. The same thoroughness characterized his further preparation in Egypt. In and about Cairo, the intellectual capital of Islam, he studied the Muslim problem and plunged into the study of Arabic, the most difficult language in the world next to the Chinese. He even tackled the language of the Egyptian that he might learn Arabic from certain sheikhs who could speak no English. He deliberately gave time in Yale, Princeton, and Cairo to a wide variety of religious activities. In the same spirit, he was always available to help individual men. As a friend put it, he was generous of his time in the service of others, and niggardly in using it for selfish ends. And, in precisely the same spirit, he found time for athletes. He took pains to make his body as efficient instruments of his mind and heart. Physically, said one of his fellow students, he was one of the strongest men I've ever known. He was deeply conscientious of safeguarding time for his private devotional life. He was a tireless student of the Bible, not only studying it intensely each day at his morning watch, but also investigating its teaching on special themes and reading two or three chapters each night before retiring. Prayer was to him a normal, necessary process in the development of Christ-like character. He prayed for victory over his own brusqueness and impatience, and for other victories in the field of character. But his prayer life was not self-centered. Among his papers, a 7-page memorandum of special objects for prayer was found, including both individuals and movements, and literally covering all the inhabited areas of the earth. It was because he believed so implicitly in the efficiency of prayer that he was always eager to enlist his friends in intercession both for himself and for things in which he was especially interested. Thus, to Borden, time was a talent and no part of it was to be laid up in a napkin. Number four, of his influence he was an equally careful trustee, vigorously antagonistic in every evil tendency. He threw his whole weight aggressively on the side of the things in which he believed. It is little wonder that a man like this left his mark in Yale. He hoped he might do it. In a letter he wrote just after his freshman year opened, he referred to certain college evils which had already come to his notice. Rather a hopeless state of affairs. I hope to be able to do something by the grace of God to mend matters. And he did a good deal of mending. An instance of this occurred when he was in his freshman year. He and a few classmates influenced upperclassmates to prevent a carousel which 50 freshmen were planning to hold. Professor Henry B. Wright, who knew Borden well, gives this opinion. Few men at Yale have left so strong an impression on the character of men of their time as Borden did. No undergraduate since I have been connected with Yale has done so much for Christ in 4 short years as Bill did. His influence was both wide and deep, though he was unwilling to alter his principles a hairbreadth to win favor. Indeed, his unyielding, almost stubborn adherence to his high standards cost him popularity in some quarters. Some thought him lacking in tolerance and at times impatience, but always he was a considerate and loving friend even to those from whom he differed in opinions. And, unbending as he was in every matter of principle, he had a genteel that won men. He was a keen roughhouser and had a great fond of merriment. The old sea captain who sailed the Borden yacht for 10 years put it well. If anyone showed on their outside the happiness of being a Christian, it was Mr. Borden. Every instinct in him combined with his eager desire to serve men made Borden anxious to conceal those accidental possessions which might seem to differentiate him from his fellows. He lived modestly just as one more man among men. Some prospective missionaries hoped to begin to lead men into the Christian life when they reached a mission field. To Borden, such a postponement would have been the betrayal of a trust, since he had influence to invest along the way. While in London, before he went to college, he spent an afternoon trying to locate a man to whom he had presented Christ the night before. In his sophomore year, he roamed with a student for the sake of seeing men become a Christian. He saw college men in their rooms. He tracked them to evil resorts. He followed them up with letters, if by all means he might save some. Now it was just a Jew in New Haven, now a Bremen on a steamer, now an aristocrat in a drawing room, now a discharged butler, now a prisoner behind bars. From Cairo he wrote a friendly letter to convict number 2724, then at liberty and a Christian, asking his prayers in behalf of a Muslim woman. And it must not be thought that because Borden did so much of this work, it was easy for him. To the very end, he had to overcome a painful defiancy in personal work. On one occasion, he called on a fellow student to talk with him about a spiritual life, but after an hour's struggle with himself, he left without having as much as raised the subject. He persisted, however, in doing his duty, and the influence he vested in personal work brought large returns. Number five, the same principle of stewardship determined the use of his money. He was a careful administrator of the property which he had inherited. Money was not filthy lucre to him, but an agency for the highest uses. He therefore kept it steadily at work. His financial agent made the strictest accountings, and Borden himself kept accurate records of all his expenditures. He was far from being ascetic, and he was not niggardly in the least, but as a follower of Christ he felt that he could not be self-indulgent and so spent little on himself. But he was alert for opportunities to give away his money wisely. He kept in a separate account the funds that were set apart for benevolence and told his financial agent that he was especially concerned about that account. Half of a spending allowance received from his father on his 17th birthday was turned over to the Young Men's Christian Association in Osaka, Japan, where he was staying at the time. He received $2,000 as an extra dividend. He immediately distributed it all to good causes. He supported and helped support missionaries in more than one field. These and what he gave to the mission in New Haven were but a few of his gifts, but they suggest a wide range of activities in all parts of the world, which he found it a pleasure to support. It should be added that, while an undergraduate at Yale, he lived on a moderate allowance and that contributions which he made were possible only because he practiced rigid self-denial. All this was done unobtrusively. He wanted his share in establishing the Yale Hope Mission to be kept secret. In list of donors, he did not wish even his initials to appear. In the quietest ways, he spent his money out on kindly errands in 100 directions. Number 6. What did it mean, this ideal of stewardship that shaped the whole character and career of William Borden, but that he himself was given unreservedly to God and his kingdom? His ideals were fixed, and neither circumstances without nor causality within would alter them for a day. The test of wealth and social position was a hard one, but he met it unswervingly, for he had set the will of God as a pole star of his life. He did not accept it passively as many do, but he went out to meet it and seize it and loved it and lived by it. In his mind, the utmost aspect of the will of God was a divine will for the world's redemption. This thought was with him up to his last conscious moments, and even in his delirium he talked of nothing else. Who then shall say that his life was broken off or cut short? Many who love Bill Borden were steadied by the thought that since his one ambition was that God's perfect will might be done in him and through him, and since it was that perfect will that called him away, his work on earth must have been rounded and complete. For further readings, Samuel M., capital Z-W-E-M-E-R, William Whitney Borden. Suggestions for thoughts and discussions? What are our resources? What were Borden's resources? In what respect were they out of the ordinary? What is the relation of resources to stewardship responsibility? To what extent were Borden's social connections as assets or a liability? How did he regard them? Was Borden responsible for greater influence because of his wealth? How far is the person responsible for the loss of the world of his neglected or undeveloped personal talents? What is involved in stewardship and the use of resources? What is the difference between being busy and being a steward of one's times? What can be learned from Borden's life? How far is Borden's plan of keeping a minute account of expenditure a guarantee of money stewardship? Is it possible to be a steward without keeping account of money and time expenditures? To what extent is preventable ill health a violation of the principle of stewardship? Does a life governed by a sense of stewardship lose its freedom? What is the purpose of stewardship of resources? What was the place of resources and of stewardships in Borden's achievements? What can be said in general? What was the influence of Borden's sense of stewardship on his life work decision? To whom are we responsible as stewards of our resources? What resources have college students with implied immediate obligations of stewardship? Additional topics for our investigation report. Give a sketch of the student volunteer movement. Explain the watchword of the movement. What are the main points in the belief of Mohammedans? In what non-Christian worlds of the country are there no Christian missionaries?